So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, Carol. You know, I want to start with your story on how the very beginnings of your career all came together. You received a $1,000 anonymous check to start your journey in Hollywood.
It was a loan. And this gentleman and his wife saw me perform at a party, and I was at UCLA at the time, and they said, what do you want to be, you know, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, well, someday I want to be able to go to New York and be on Broadway. And they said, well, why aren't you there now? I said, well, you know, we were poor. And I said, well, I'm saving up. I'm hoping to get. And he said, I'll lend you the money. And he lent me $1,000, which was to go to New York on. And that really jump-started my career. Paid him back 5 years to the day that he lent me the money. But that gave me my start.
But that was $1,000 in the 1950s. That was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money. Yeah. I've never seen that many zeros in my life, you know. And he said there were stipulations. He said, one, you must use this money to go to New York. Two, it's a loan. You pay it back, you know, in 5 years if you are successful. Three, you must never reveal my name. And four, if you are successful, you must help others out.
Wow.
That you have faith in.
Wow. What a great mission, and an incredible opportunity. That doesn't happen every day.
No. Not at all. And so that gave me the courage to go. I'd never been further east than Texas, you know. I had no idea when I landed in New York what I was going to do, where I was going to live. It was pretty, but I wasn't scared.
You had confidence.
I had confidence because I was raised on the movies that starred Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney, where everything was going to be fine. And that was my imprint as a child, you know, being raised during that era with those movies. Everything worked out, you know. The good guys got it. The bad guys didn't, you know. It didn't work for them. And so I was never cynical.
And that gave you the drive to succeed.
Yep.
And from there, I know you did what every hungry actor did. You worked jobs around town until you got your first gig on the Paul Winchell and Jerry Mahoney show. And years after that, after appearances on The Tonight Show with Jack Parr and Ed Sullivan, you got the Gary Moore show. And I know Gary, you've always cited as one of your mentors.
Oh, he was so kind. And this is what I did with my show. I kind of copied what Gary did. Because I would remember we would sit around the table. You know, we'd have a table reading on a Monday for the Friday show. And if he had a joke or something he wasn't too sure about himself, he would say, you know what, Durward, you take this punchline. You can say it funnier. Or he'd say it to me. Give this to Carol. She can say it funnier than I can. And so he was not afraid to share. You know, so we were a true rep company, and that's what I wanted with my show, that even though my name was on it, there would be many sketches where I'd be supporting Harvey or Tim or Vicky, and then they'd be supporting me. So it was a true, true rep company, which is what I fashioned for after doing Gary's show.
He let others shine. And
absolutely, because it only makes your show better.
It does. It does. And he's a guy that nobody, you know, unfortunately, there's just not, Gary Moore's name isn't mentioned enough in the pioneering of television.
You're absolutely right. It was a wonderful comedy variety show. And the music, some of the production numbers were totally worthy of Broadway. And that's what I wanted my show to do, too. To, you know, we mounted what would amount to a musical comedy review every week. And, you know, and we did it just like you do a Broadway show.
It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to TV icon Carol Burnett. Carol, you were doing many TV specials in the 1960s, and you had a contract waiting for a variety show, and you pulled the trigger on this contract right before it expired.
That's right.
And you said, let's do this variety series. And they went, what?
they didn't remember that it was in the contract, and that if I wanted to do an hour-long variety show, all I had to do was push the button, and they would have to put it on for 30 one-hour pay-or-play weeks.
Wow.
And they didn't want that was in the contract, and they didn't want to do it. And they said, we want you to do a sitcom, you know, called, get this, Here's Agnes.
It sounds horrible.
I said, but I don't want to be the same person every week. I want to do different characters and, you know, the way I did on Gary Moore's show. And they had to put us on the air. They did not. That's the only reason I got the show. It never would have happened if I hadn't had that in the contract.
But they didn't think this was a woman's game, doing a variety show.
That's right. That's what they said. You know, Carol, variety, comedy variety is a man's game. It's Jackie Gleason. It's Sid Caesar. It's Milton Berle. And at that time, now it's Dean Martin. You know, and I don't even think of it like, you know, being a woman doing it. I just want to do what I did on Gary's show. And, you know, you couldn't do what we did today because we had 28-piece orchestra.
Wow.
You know, no synthesizers or, you know, fake music. Yeah. It was all real.
Yeah.
We had 12 dancers. Bob Mackie created 60 to 70 costumes a week.
That's amazing.
He would come up with everything everybody wore. Whatever you saw on the screen, Bob designed the costumes for. And then the two guest stars a week and the rep company. It was really exciting. And, you know, to get, the guests. I just finished writing my fourth book, and it's about the show.
Oh, cool. Oh, how wonderful.
It's about how we got started, how we found Vicki and Harvey and Lyle and Kim and so forth, anecdotes about some of many of the guest stars, rundowns of some of the sketches, descriptions of the sketches, and musical numbers and stuff, and, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff that happened. And so that's coming out next September.
Wonderful. We'll talk to you then about that as well. And I'll tell you, though, this is what killed me when I was a kid, because I was born in 67, so I missed those early years. But when the season ended in May or whenever it was, and you you were mopping up, I hated it because I knew I wasn't going to see you again for months.
Oh.
It was a bummer because, I mean,
that's so sweet.
That was Saturday nights. That was Saturday nights, is making popcorn, getting in your jammies, and watching Carol Burnett for my age. Yeah.
That's the nicest compliment you can give me.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. And it is so much fun to watch those shows. I have to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked this before, you had favorites that were on the show because you gelled with those people, you know, the Ken Berrys, the Jim Nabors. Who was, yes. Was Jimmy Stewart the most exciting guest that you've had on the show that really did something?
Actually, he wasn't a guest. He came on and surprised me on our final show.
On the special evening with Carol Burnett, that's right.
Yeah, the very last show of the 11th season. And I didn't know he was there, but we were friends. And so Tim came out and he said, he interrupted me. I was talking to the audience. He said, there's a guy backstage who's always wanted to be on the show, and I thought you should give him a whirl or whatever it was he said. And I thought, what in the world is Tim talking about? And the curtain went up, and there was Jimmy sitting at the piano.
Wow. I remember that. Curtains opened. That's right.
Oh, and I screamed, and then I started to cry because he was my favorite actor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so he wasn't what you would call a regular guest that week, but he came on, he played us and sang his favorite song, Ragtime Cowboy Joe, and then he came over and talked to me, and he said, in essence, he was very complimentary about our 11 years and so forth and whatever, and I was just blubbering like a baby. I was just so touched, and they hid him all day in a dressing room, so you know, out of sight, so I wouldn't see him.
What a nice
gift. He and his wife came, and they were just kind of hanging out backstage, you know, and I had no idea that he was going to do that, but it was it was one of the most thrilling things that ever happened to me on the show.
What a lovely gift.
Yeah.
What a lovely gift. And what surprises me is you guys did the show a couple times. You know, you did a more of a dress rehearsal, and then you did the actual show. I mean, that's a lot of work.
We taped it at we tape around 5 o'clock, the dress rehearsal, and we would tape that, and then we'd break and have notes and maybe rewrite a couple of things, and then have another a different audience come in, and then we'd do the show at 8. But we didn't, we would go pretty much straight through, because I never wanted to keep the studio audience waiting. So I'd make quick costume changes, since the scenery would go fast, and we'd be out of there. We'd take maybe an hour and 15 minutes, and we'd be out of there in about 2 hours, 15 minutes. Yeah. Because now some shows today, I mean, they go to 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, they keep doing pickups and this and that, and the audience is long gone, and it, I don't think it makes it any better.
Well, you did it almost close to live. I mean, you tried to
we did.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a bug about that, because I didn't want to keep the studio audience waiting, and if they got bored and we couldn't get their, you know, get them to respond, then we weren't that good. You know what
sure.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we really kept it going, you know, and I would make a bet with the stagehands that I could do a skin-out change faster than they can move a sofa over to the other end of the stage. You know, it's my Broadway training.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
Man, we'd be out, and in time, we'd finish in time to go to dinner, take the guests to dinner.
How cool is that? Well, you can catch The Carol Burnett Show on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, and Peacock, on local public television and classic TV stations nationwide. And if you want to own The Carol Burnett Show entire series on DVD, go to timelife.com. I think I got it all, Carol.
Oh, that's true. Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely. It's been a privilege.
Go get that cocktail.
I'm going to do that. All right. Have a good evening.
Take
All right.
care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye, darling.
Carol Burnett turns 90 next week, and on her birthday, NBC is throwing her a birthday party on Wednesday, April 26th at 7. We're celebrating Carol this hour, and now my interview with Carol Burnett show regular, Vicki Lawrence.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I am thrilled. I am thrilled and such a big fan growing up watching you and the Carol Burnett shows for so many years.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. You know, I have to say, for someone that's been working in television for the late since the late 60s, you are incredibly young because you started so young.
Oh.
And I love, and you look great, by the way. I love, love, love the story on how you were discovered while you were senior in high school by your friend Carol Burnett. Please share that story with us.
It's easy to look good when we're on the radio together, don't you?
That's
I just
true.
Say that.
That's true. That's true.
I thought it was good to everybody out there.
Funny.
You know,
funny.
When we put this show together, I knew that it was going to be predominantly Mama because everybody loves her so much. But I said to everybody that was helping me, I said, I need to be me before I'm not anymore. So we put together the show so that basically Vicki is Mama's opening act. And the Vicki portion of the show is largely autobiographical. And I get asked about the story about how I met Carol all the time. And some people know it was a contest. Some people know there was a letter involved. Everybody has the details wrong. So I knew that that had to be my opening story in the show, how I met her. And matter of fact, back in the day when we first started on the Carol Burnett show, we would get interviewed and cross-examined like we had made the whole thing up as a publicity stunt. Because, I mean, I think it's every bit as good as Lana Turner at Schwab for those people who are old enough to remember
yeah.
that legend.
Uh-huh.
But that was like the great Hollywood legend, you know, Lana Turner being plucked off of a soda fountain in Hollywood. But I briefly wrote her a fan letter because everybody said I looked like her. And she came to see this whole contest I was going to be in. And it just so happened that she was right in the midst of starting to put together the Carol Burnett show. She was in the middle of moving to, she I think had just moved to California from New York. And it was just very serendipitous timing.
Well, you were very, you know? I mean, you were in high school, you know, first of all. Second of all, like, how did you know of Carol? Was it seeing her on Gary Moore? Was it Broadway? Was it her TV appearances? Like, what got you interested in Carol herself?
I actually, at the time, she was on a show, or just, you know, shortly before this, was on a show called The Entertainment with Bob Newhart. She and Bob Newhart were co-hosts, I believe.
Okay.
And John Davidson was like your little cute sing-a-song-every-week guy, and I had a crush on him. So
Wow.
I watched that show, probably mostly, sorry, Carol, because of John Davidson. And I do remember, you know, Once Upon a Mattress was our senior musical in high school. So I knew the show very well. I do remember seeing that on television.
Yep.
That's pretty much how I knew her. I mean, I was really trying to marry Tyler Moore, Dave. I was trying very hard.
I knew that. I knew that she was... Your capris?
I wore my hair just like Mary did. I wore the capris just like Mary did. I thought she was absolutely gorgeous. I was trying very hard to be her. But then when I cut my hair short right before I went into high school, everybody started saying I was like Girl Burnett.
Yeah, which you absolutely do. Now, I wanted to back a little bit. What were the first days like getting ready for that show? You know, it must have been surreal because, and nervous as well, because, I mean, you were part of this fabulous ensemble. It was CBS, first of all, didn't want to give Carol a variety show. They thought that was just a guy's game. And right. And I know, you know, they wanted to give her a sitcom, and she was like, no. And they were kind of contractually obligated to do this in the late 60s right. when variety was so big already for the last two decades. But now you're creating a brand new show. What were those first days like?
You know, I wasn't really privy to any of the stress or the tension or any of that stuff that's going on. I was heard in the beginning just to play her sister in a recurring sketch called Carol and Sif. And it's interesting. They actually managed to clear some of the shows in the first 5 years of Carol Burnett. And those will be coming out on DVD. I think we're doing, I don't know, interviews or bonus features or something in April for that. So those are going to be coming out, which should be a trip because, you know, it was a different time period.
It was, we don't see a lot of those.
I get a kick out of watching Mad Men because it's such a beautifully done reminder of what that period was like and how much we have changed, you know?
Yeah.
We really, I mean, I was talking to Carol not too long ago, and she said, oh my God, the stuff we did in the 60s, that you're like, what, you don't do that, you know? Women, get your self-esteem together.
That's funny. That's...
You don't talk that way. You know.
But you know what? That back then, we haven't seen that as viewers, as fans. You know, those shows haven't been ever available on DVD, and they haven't been part
they
of those Carol Burnett. Yeah, no.
They have not been unearthed. But we did do, I have to say, some pretty great stuff in the very first few years. But anyway, No, I didn't have any stress. I was a child. I was too stupid to know. You know, Harvey used to say, forget stage right or stage left. You can't even find the ladies' room. So, you know, I think being the team player that he was, he took me under his wing and really tried to teach me everything he could about comedy. And I feel like I had a private tutor, you know?
Yeah, that's very cool.
Carol was busy running the show. And I look back on it now and I think, what an incredibly special place that was to grow up and to learn, because that just doesn't happen. That kind of atmosphere doesn't happen in show business very often.
No, it absolutely doesn't.
You don't run into that. And you know, I don't think it would happen nowadays what happened to me, because, I mean, nowadays, if you're not Carrie Underwood out of the box, the judges are going to vote you off. If the judges don't, America will. You know?
Yeah, they don't take the time. Yeah, they don't take
no,
the time. There used to be time for
no
a show
history.
To breathe. Yeah, there used to be times for shows to breathe a little bit. I mean, as soon as, you know, two episodes and you're done. And I know you guys used to do two shows on Friday, which had to been so grueling. I mean, you're talking about two full shows. You know, sometimes they do a walkthrough and then they do the live show for taping. You actually did two live shows for taping.
We did. We taped it twice. There was very much editing done. I mean, they'd edit between those two shows if they needed to, but I think that's why people love watching it so much, because it is like being there live, you know, and you get to see pretty much at home what the audience saw.
Well, and what I love, too, is, you know, over the course of that series, you know, you and Harvey and Tim and Lyle and Carol, you know, you guys always step back and allow the guest star to be the kind of the big focus of the show, which I really loved, because you let them kind of shine in all of this. And you guys were all just kind of supporting, you know, the big grand star that was on.
Well, that's Carol. You know, that's all Carol. I mean, there's definitely a trickle-down theory in show business. It comes from the top, and she's a very special lady. There aren't a lot of people. I mean, the older people that worked on Carol's show used to say to me when I was 18 years old, you wait till you get out into the real world of showbiz, kid, because this ain't it. She was just incredibly giving and supportive and nurturing. I mean, you know, I'd be sitting over in the corner with my three lines to say at Carol's this, and she would say, we need to fix page two, so-and-so, I don't like that. She said, Vicki needs a better joke on page 14, and I'd say, I do, and she'd say, hush now. Yes, you do.
Yeah, very rare. That's very rare.
Yeah, no, it's just, yeah.
It's a great lesson.
Yeah, very special lady.
Great lesson. So many memorable skits. You mentioned Carol and Sis, and we'll talk about the family in just a little bit. But, man, there were some fabulous skits, fabulous guest stars. You know, I think my favorite that I still remember just talking to you about it and hearing your voice was when you were a wealthy heiress with Harvey Korman, and Carol and Tim were the maid and the butler, and you were passing along the physical nature of a fight. Some of the
Harvey and I were mad at each other, and Carol and Tim did all the physical stuff.
Yeah, I mean, classic stuff. What were some of your favorite moments on the show? Some of your favorite guest stars?
Oh gosh, I loved the movie Takeoff, especially the movie Musical we did, and those were so much fun. And that's predominantly what I did when I was growing up, was music.
Right.
And, you know, dancing in choral groups. I was in every choral group on my campus and sang with the Young Americans. So I loved the music, loved the musical rehearsals. And, you know, it just all happened so smoothly and so fast that it really was like magic.
Yeah.
Because her staff was so incredible.
Yeah.
As far as guests, I think I probably got more excited about the musical than anybody. I nearly died when Bobby Gentry was on the show.
Wow.
Because I was so in love with Billy Joe. And I'm not sure anybody else on the show knew who she was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when the Jackson 5 came on, oh my God. But just the musical. I really love the musical stuff.
Well, you mentioned once before, I heard you talk about Sammy Davis Jr. being a guest on the show, and he put on like an entire show for you guys, whether it was one afternoon or after the show taped. Yeah.
After our wins run through, which was hump day for us, we'd get through run through, and he made arrangements to have his entire orchestra set up in our studio, Studio 33. He could stay down there and do a concert for us.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, the most memorable character you created was that of Thelma Harper, Mama from the Family Sketches, and we'll talk about that with the legendary Vicki Lawrence next on 720 WGN. So in 1974, Vicki, there was an idea for that recurring sketch called The Family. Tell us how that all kind of began.
Well, I think it was two of the writers on the show, and they both hated their mothers, and so they wrote beautiful homage to their dysfunctional families.
Yeah.
With the intention that Carol would play Mama. And when Carol saw the final draft, she said, Eunice is the character that speaks to me. So it was very upsetting to the writers. She then said she thought that perhaps they would consider me being Mama. It was doubly upsetting to the writers. But, you know, honestly, I played so many old ladies and wicked witches and, you know, mean old school marms and all that by that time. It was like just another old lady at the time. So Bob Mackie said, yeah, no problem. We can make Vicki Mama.
You were 20. And, you were 24 at the time. I mean, you were.
I was 24. But I did that a lot on her show. I played
yeah.
the supporting female, and a lot of the times it was a crazy old lady, you know?
Yeah.
And then we got to rehearsal, and she said, you guys, I think we need to do this Southern. Never indicated in the script that it would be Southern at all. And the writers were so upset that they actually walked out of the rehearsal hall the first time they saw us do it. They said, you've just absolutely ruined it. And so, you know, that's one of the most important things I learned from Carol is your instinct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was right.
Yeah. And you know, as you Eunice, Ed, and Mama in most of the sketches, you had so many guest stars that played family members. There was a time, and I was born, let me just tell you, I was born in 67, so I was young when the show was on. But there was a time that if the show didn't have a family sketch in it, I would be totally bummed. Like, if we got through a whole show and there was no Eunice and Mama and everything, because, you know, Jackie Gleason used to do that in the 50s, early 50s, when he had his variety show, he would filter in a Honeymooner sketch until that became a series. Just like that. And there's a blooper out there that's gotten, this amazes me, that it's gotten well over a million hits on YouTube, and that is a sketch of the family with you and Carol.
Right. Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
I think I hear people all the time say they sent that. Somebody sent that to me. I sent that to somebody. Yeah, it's around. Blooper.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she, you know, and Carol, I think, arguably, too, would say that those were her favorite characters on the Sprint show.
Yeah.
But it used to, and they could not crank those sketches out fast enough. But it was a male and a female writing team. And it would take the two of them at least 3 weeks to crank one of those out, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They were so beautifully written. And back in the day, it was typewriters. You'd hear the typewriters clinking like mad for a few days. Wow. Then you'd go by their office and hear them screaming and yelling at each other. You know, he'd do all the male parts. She'd do all the female parts. Then you'd hear the typewriters going again.
That's awesome.
You know, it'd take like 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they asked you, I know, to do a series with Mama originally while the Carol Burnett Show was still on the air, right?
Yes.
And that was a time where you said...
Well, yeah, I felt like, well, first of all, I had just been pregnant, and I wasn't sure I wanted to be a fat old lady every week. and I also said, how the heck do I do this without you guys? And what if it doesn't work? Then what? And Carol's husband said to me, well, then you come back to this show. I said, with my tail tucked between my legs?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, I know Carol was thrilled because I remember seeing her the next day and she's coming down the hall at CBS, woo, you know, this is great. This means we still get to do it on my show. So, you know, she didn't really try to coerce me into doing it until after the Burnett Show had gone off the air.
Well, I was going to say, it went off the air, and there was a teleplay, Eunice, that aired on CBS.
Yeah.
It was a very unusual thing because it was literally a play, like almost like I think it was a 90-minute play, and they killed off Mama. They killed your character off. So how do you go from there?
Well, I don't know. How did JR do on Dallas?
That's true. Well, you were nominated for an Emmy for that, and then you were offered the show again for NBC in 1983, and you grabbed it. You did it.
Carol and Joe really talked me into it. Carol said, you really, really need to do this. She was just so sure it was such a solid character. And, I trusted her.
Yeah.
I said, what about you? She said, well, come and visit. We'll come and visit, but you don't need us. So.
Yeah, you had a lot of creative input on that series as well over the years. I mean, you really kind of helped steer the direction of that show.
Well, I tried. I mean, I said, and we had a great writing staff. Again, I'm just going to say our executive producer, our head writer, I just saw him not too long ago. We were talking. He's a good Southern boy and has a real good handle on all of that Southern, just their, you know, the way they word things, the way they sing, and the whole dysfunctional family thing, you know.
Yeah.
We had a really good staff, and yeah, they would listen. In particular, I remember a week where this script was wrong. My ne'er-do-well, my husband's brother shows up, and he's a merchant marine, by the end of the show, everybody thinks that I have slept with him. And I said, you know, we read this, table read. I said, I think Mama is so Bible Belt.
Yeah.
And she would never sleep with this person, ever. I don't care how dead your husband is, you don't sleep with his brother.
Yeah.
And, so they went back to the drawing board, had to rewrite the ending. So at the end, the family thinks they don't know. They're curious whether or not she's done anything she shouldn't have.
But if you know the character, you know it didn't happen.
Well, you as a viewer know it didn't happen.
Right.
My family not quite sure what happened.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, so many great episodes too. I love the wedding with Carol Harvey, Betty White, all back to the original characters, and then over a little.
Oh my God!
That was my favorite.
Look at that screen. You know, I was seeing all of these before they went out on DVD, and my husband walked in when I was looking at the wedding in particular, and I said, "Would you please look at how many people are on the screen? Harvey Korman, Betty White, Rue McClanahan, Carol Burnett. It's just like the television of the day, you know."
My conversation with Vicki Lawrence. You know, there's a birthday party for Carol Burnett next Wednesday, April 26th. You got to tune in at 7 on NBC.